Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 4 lines from the top of Daf Chof Dalet at the beginning of the Gemara. The Mishnah that we had learned in our previous shiur dealt with the number of psukim that are read, minimum number, that is, that are read as an aliyah to the Torah. Each person who's called to the Torah will read or is present for the reading of a minimum of 3 psukim per person. And here the Gemara asks, Hani, shloisha psukim keneged mi? These 3 psukim are in honor of or represent what? Omar Rav Asi, keneged Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. They represent the 3 parts of the Tanakh, the Torah, the Nevi'im, the prophets, and the Ksuvim, the later writings. We have a quote here from our Mishnah, 3-line quote, which we have in a frame. Velo yikro lemeturgimon yoyser mi pasuk echad. One should not read from the Torah more than one pasuk before the meturgimon has a chance to explain it. The meturgimon would say the Aramaic translation of each pasuk. So one pasuk at a time would be read and then would be explained by the meturgimon. Ubanovi shloisha psukim. When it comes to the reading of the Haftorah from the prophets, you were allowed to read 3 psukim, and only then would the meturgeman start his translation. V'im hoyu shloshton sholosh parshios. If the 3 psukim represented 3 separate topics, in the Novi korei echod echod, then you must read only one pasuk at a time before the translator has a chance to translate. 3 separate topics would be, let us say, too much confusion or overload if you were to read them at one time before the translator has a chance to translate. Kagon, and now the Gemara explains or gives the example of what could that possibly refer to when you say 3 separate topics in the course of 3 psukim. So here we have 3 consecutive psukim, which each one represents a separate topic from the book of Isaiah, from Sefer Yeshaya, Perek Nun Beis. So we're just going to cite the psukim as far as further depth in appreciating how they are separate topics. That would be another matter. You can look into the psukim themselves and the meforshim, the commentaries on them. So they are the following. Ki choy omar Hashem chinom nimkartem. Ki choy omar Hashem elokim mitzrayim yoradi mi borishona. Just a slight correction in the reading. Yorad Ami Borishona Ve'ato Mali Poi Ne'um Hashem. Those are Psukim, Gimel, Dalet, and Hey, one after the other, representing 3 separate topics. Medalgin Menovi V'ein Medalgin B'Torah. This we saw in the Mishnah, that one is allowed to skip in reading of the prophets, to skip a section and continue a reading later. But not so in the Torah. The Gemara now asks, and before we go further in the Gemara, let's just note on the side our topic heading and structural notes. So the topic heading, Mosai Medalgin Benovi Velo B'Torah. When is it that we say, or under what circumstances do we say, that you can skip in the prophets, but not in the Torah itself? Under the Mivneh, the structural note, we have a triangle featured. This represents a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara. So with the triangle point facing up, kushios, they represent questions, and the inverted triangle, tshuvos. Then we will see diamonds used. They represent shnei shlavim, 2 stages, b'tshuvos abaye, with regard to abaye's answers. So we continue now in the Gemara with a question. Viraminhi. We raise a contradiction to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah mentioned Ein Medalgin B'Torah, and here we have a source from Maseches Yuma, where it features the reading of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol would read from the Torah in the Beis HaMikdash, and it says Korei Achrimos. He would read from that section of Sefer Vayikra Achrimos, which deals with the Avodas Yom Kippurim, what took place in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, and then he would skip to Parshas Emor V'ach Be'asar, the Ha'kom Medalig, that involves a skipping. There's Achrimos, and then after that, after the Yom Kippur discussion, there's Parshas Kedoshim, and then there's Parshas Emor, and you have to skip quite a bit into these Parshios to get to the respective sections that are read on Yom Kippur. The Gemara answers, Omar Abaye, lo kashya, and note again, this is the first stage of the answers that are given. So Abaye says there isn't any contradiction. Kan b'chdei shiyifsok haturgamon, v'kan b'chdei shelo yifsok haturgamon. As we learned when we were learning the Mishnah, it all depends. During the time that you're skipping, is the meturgamon speaking? Is he continuing with his translation? If he is, so then our skipping ahead isn't at the expense of the congregation of the tzibur remaining in silence. They are listening to his Aramaic explanation. So if within the time that he is still translating, you can effectively skip and reach your destination in the Torah, then that's okay. That's what happened in Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, from the time it took to skip from Achrei Mos Kedoshim is a very rather short amount of time. They're rather close sections of the Torah. Hence, the Meturgaman was continuing to explain whatever was the last Pasuk of Achrei Mos that was read. In that time, you rolled ahead till the two Parshas later to Parshas Emor, and arrived at the destination without the Tzibur waiting in silence. However, our Mishnah, where we say it's usur, that's b'chdei shiyifsok haturgamon. That's where the meturgamon would have stopped before I had a chance to finish rolling ahead to where I needed to get. The Gemara continues with a question. V'ha katoni, but it says in our Mishnah the following, medalgin b'novi v'ein medalgin b'torah. There is skipping in the Navi. There is no skipping in the Torah. Ad kamahu medalig, and how much can he skip? And when do we speak about skipping? How much can he skip in the Navi, in the Haftorah? Ad kidei shalo yifsok haturgamon, as long as there isn't enough time for the turgamon to have finished his translation. So when you learn our Mishnah, you see that skipping is a possibility, using this standard of Kedesh Shelo Yifsek HaTorgamon, but it's all limited to the Prophet. It's all limited to the Haftorah. Michlal, the Betorah, Klal Lo. It would then come out that when it comes to the Torah reading, not at all. No skipping at all. Even if it's Bechdesh Shelo Yifsek HaTorgamon, even if it's within the time frame of the Meturgamon continuing his translation, no skipping whatsoever. The Gemara continues. Elo Omar Abaye. Lo kashya. We still have to resolve the original contradiction. We see in our Mishnah it says no skipping, and yet we saw that there is skipping. We saw by the Yom Kippur case. So we answer, kan be'inyin echod, kan b'shtei inyonas. If the skipping is within one topic, as is the case by the Yom Kippur reading, and of course the Meturgamon is continuing his translation before and during that time I'm able to roll ahead. In other words, I'm not rolling ahead too much, so that's okay because it's within one topic. When we say that there's no skipping whatsoever, even if it's a short amount of skipping, that's b'shtei inyonos, two separate topics. There you're not allowed to skip from one to the other. Now, v'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source, and this is a case where it's brought in as support, not as a question. That's why we wrote in Benichusa support to this, medalgin b'torah b'inyin echad. You are allowed to skip in Torah reading, provided it's within the same topic. In other words, you have one topic, part of it is dealt with in one parshion, and a short while later, the same topic is picked up in the next, in a little bit later, as a result of some skipping. Ubenovi b'shnei inyonim. And when it comes to the prophets, you're allowed to skip even from one topic to another. Kan v'chan b'chdei shelo yivsek haturgamon. In both cases, where you are going to be skipping, meaning rolling ahead, it is allowed, provided the Meturgamon does not finish his Targum, his translation in the meantime. Tanyo idach, ein medalgin minovi lenovi. One is not to skip from one prophet to another. So that if you're reading from the book of Yeshayo, from the book of Isaiah, you're not allowed to skip ahead to the book of Jeremiah, to the book of Yirmiyahu. That's skipping from one prophet to another. Ubenovi shel shnei mosar, that's the collection of short nevuas that we call treasar. Unfortunately, it's referred to as the minor prophets. It's minor means only in terms of length, not that the individuals, the prophets themselves, were minor individuals. But it's that book of 12, we'll call it the 12 short prophecies. There, you are allowed, midaleg. You're dealing with short sections, so you're skipping from one prophet to the next. You are allowed to skip from one prophet to another within the book of Treasar, within that volume, within that scroll. Ubavad shelo yadaleg misoif hasefer l'tchilas, provided it is in order and you don't roll backwards from a latter section of Treasar to an earlier section to Treasar. There is an official order of the prophets that you find in that body of work. So you're allowed to skip from one prophet to the other, provided that you don't do it. Rashi uses the word lemafreya, means backwards. Just to clarify that in, say, for Treasar, if let us say you are reading from the prophecies of Malachi, which you find at the end, so you're not allowed to roll back to an earlier prophet, let us say Micha, even though you are within the Treasar. That's rolling backwards, and it's out of order. We continue now with a new Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading, Kibudim Shezoiche Lohem Hamaftir. The person who reads the Haftorah, you see, is granted additional honors in the context of the synagogue service. The Mishnah. Hamaftir binovi. That means one who regularly reads the Haftorah. And here, maybe that's what we have to emphasize. Rashi says, Misha rogil haftir. Who poires al shmavu oiver lefnei hateva v'hu noisei askapov. So there are three honors that are conveyed to this individual. The first is called Poreis al Shema. Now that itself is something that requires a lot of explanation. There are different opinions as to what Poreis al Shema is, and we mentioned that in our previous shiur, so by all means try to listen to the previous shiur, but just briefly, it's a reference to, according to one pshat, the Rashi pshat, along with the Ran's explanation on that, that people who came into shul one by one and they finished basically finished the davening without having heard Kaddish and Boruch Hu and Kedusha. So there is an allowance that if 10 had assembled by the end of the davening, so one person gets up and he recites the Kaddish, says Boruch Hu, and reads the first Broch of Kriya Shema. That's Poreis al Shema. So we'll refer to that simply as that particular role, that honor. So the one who regularly reads the Haftorah, he would be the one to Poreis al Shema. He is over Lifnei Ateva. He's the one that will lead the recitation of the Shemona Esrei for the Tzibor, which includes the Kedusha, the recitation of the Kedusha paragraph. And he also, who knows, says Kapov. Now that particular line is very difficult in and of itself. It literally means that he will do Birkas Kehanim. But Birkas Kehanim, the priestly blessing, the duchening, is not limited to one individual. So the Meforshim on the Mishnayos do grapple with that. But we're going to just leave it as such that there is an honor called Vehu Nosei Es Kapov. The Im Hoya Koton, if the one who is reading the Haftorah is a minor, and therefore he can't be Poreis al Shema, he can't be Oiver Lifnei Ateva, so Oviv Oi Rabbi Oivrin Al Yodo. Al Yodo means for him. His father or his teacher, his Rebbe, will do that in his stead. Now as we go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is broken down into three different examples, and under our Mivneh heading on the side, you can see we've highlighted a crown shape, Koton, Pocheach, and Sumah, three different types of individuals. And a Koton is a minor. Pocheach, Rashi says, is someone who is whose feet are exposed, who's barefoot. Tosfos doesn't like that pshat. Tosfos says one who is in tattered clothing. And Suma is someone who is usually the word Suma means one who is blind. The term can also mean, and we're going to deal with this later as well, that it has to do with someone who's missing an eye. In other words, his eye is closed or is simply missing. That we're going to get into when we get to Amud Beis later on. But it has to do with certainly deals with lack of eyesight minimally. But there's room to add to that. As we said, he's literally missing his eye. So we're going to see concerning these three categories, Koton, Pocheach, and Suma, five halachas. And we have a little chart on the side, Korei B'Torah, going down the right-hand column, Korei B'Torah, the issue of their reading from the Torah, Mitargem, to say the Aramaic explanation, Pores Al Shema, that involves what we said before, the recitation of Kaddish in Baruch Hu, and the first paragraph of Kriya Shema, which speaks about the Almighty's fashioning or forming, creating the heavenly lights, the sun, the other bodies of illumination. Over Lifnei Ateva is the leading of the Shmona Esrei, and Nosei Kapov doing the Birkas Kohanim. So five issues, and each one of these issues has relevance to the Koton, Pokeach, and Suma, as we will see in the Mishnah. So you can always refer to the chart as well. Koton, Korei B'Torah, a minor can serve as the Torah reader, umetargem, and also serve as the translator of the presenting the Aramaic translation. Avol eino pores al shma, v'eino oiver lifnei hateva, v'eino noisei es kapov. Pocheach, pores es shma, umetargem, avol eino korei b'Torah, v'eino oiver lifnei hateva, v'eino noisei es kapov. Suma, pores es shma, umetargem. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Kol Shelo Ro Ma'oros Miyamov, anyone who had no awareness of light, he never saw light, never had seen Ma'oros is light, then Eino Pores Al Shema. He is not qualified to Pores Al Shema, because part of being Pores Al Shema has to do with the recitation of the first bracha of the Kriya Shema, the morning Kriya Shema brachos, which features the Almighty's forming of the heavenly illumination bodies. My Taima. Now the Gemara focuses on the point mentioned at the beginning of the Mishnah. Why is the Maftir assigned these other roles, other honors? So on the side of the Gemara, we have a introduction. Machlokes, we will see a controversy between Rav Popa, Virabo Bar Simi, Maitaimo Tiknu, why did they establish the Hamaftir, Hu Ha'oivir Bifnei Ateva? Why is he the one that's given the honor of leading the Shmona Esrei in the Tzibor? Rav Popa says it's a function of kavod, function of honoring him. Rabo Bar Simi, it talks about insuye, yavo l'riv. If he doesn't do it, so controversy can arise, strife, fighting can break out. Now the Gemara, my taimo, we asked, why is the maftir the one who is over lifnei ateva? Rav Popa Omar mishum kavod. Rashi mishum kavod. Rashi explains lahavir lifnei ateva. We have him lead the Shmona Esrei. Hoyol umamsi atzmo ledovor she'eno kvoidoi tiknu lo zu lechavod. Since he made himself available for doing something that's not a great honor, and This might sound a little unusual, but let's put it this way. Relative to being called up to the Torah itself, one who is called up to the prophet is a lesser level of honor. So a person can feel, let us say, slighted that he received that lesser honor. So to compensate him, we establish that he, in addition to being the maftir, he also does something else. He's over lifnei ha-teva. That's Rav Popa. Now, Rabo Bar Simi, we go on in the Gemara Omar, Mishum De'osi L'insuye. They can, if he doesn't do that, they can come to arguments. Now, Rashi says, Mishum De'insuye, Hadover Boli De Machloikis. There could be fights. Ani Mafti V'ato Tavor Lifnei Ateva, what I should do the Haftorah, and you should go ahead and lead the Shemona Esrei. That having been said, we have a bracketed, a very short bracketed section. The note on the side where we have our star, so Graim Lashem Dilug. This bracketed section is for skipping purposes. The Hante Kotoni Tnan Achrias Sograim Muval Kekusha Al Rabo Bar Simi. After the brackets, we want to introduce a question on Rabo Bar Simi so as to make it clear that the Tanan is not a question on that which appears immediately before it. We used the brackets. So now we learn the bracketed section. My Binai, what is the difference between Rav Popa's approach and Rabo Bar Simi's approach? Iko Binayu de Ovid Bechinom. The point of difference between these two opinions would be if the one who leads the Shemona Esrei, he does it as an unpaid service. He's not paid for it. So that would be a point of difference. If he does it for nothing, so then the issue of strife, of machloikes in Suyi will not arise. That won't come to be. There won't be any arguments if someone else is over Lifnei Ateva. However, if it's an issue of kavod, of compensating the fellow for having taken the lighter honor of Haftorah, so then he does, he will be over Lifnei Ateva, because that consideration still remains. That's what before we go further in the Gemara, let's take a look at the Rabbeinu Hananel, who elaborates on this. There's a starred reference down on the lower part of the page in the Rabbeinu Hananel commentary. We read, Ravo Bar Simi Omar Mishum In Suyi Klomar Chayshinon. We are concerned Dilmo Osu Lemeimar, that if you don't have the person who's doing the maftir also doing the Over Lifnei Ateva, the Puris Al Shema, the following could arise. The guy will say, oh, I should be maftir, I do maftir, and v'zeh Puris Al Shema, v'chizeh godol mimeni likach schar, is he greater than me that he should then do Puris Al Shema and get paid for that? Hilkuch hiskinu lios hamaftir Puris Al Shema Over Lifnei Ateva. Therefore, to avoid this type of strife, we said that the fellow who's going to do the Haftorah, he also does the Puris Al Shema and Over Lifnei Ateva. If it's an unpaid role, the one who is Puris Al Shema and Over Lifnei Ateva, if it's unpaid, then the only issue is one of kavod. And, well, who introduced kavod? Only Rav Papa spoke about that. According to Rabbi Bar Simi, it wouldn't be a consideration. Avolo minsu, el b'mokum shapuris al shema, uvel lifnei ateva noitel schar. The issue of strife comes up only when the one who is puris al shema, or is uvel lifnei ateva, gets paid for it. So now, let us continue in the Gemara. Tanan. We have in our mission, it says, the imhoya koton, if the maftir was a minor, oviv oy raboy oivrim al yodo. Al yodo means for him. So that the father or the Rebbe will serve in that capacity of oviv lifnei ateva for him. E amris mishum in suye. If you say that the issue is coming to strife, where the maftir, as we saw, but we illustrated through the Rabbeinu Hananiel, that the maftir will say, "What I should do the maftir, and you should do this. You should be oivulifnei ateva and get paid for that." So if you say that that's the consideration, what katan bar nitzuyahu? Can you imagine a minor getting involved with that? It's unlikely. So it must be that the issue is not an insuye issue. Elomai, so we ask in return. In other words, if we were asking on Rabba Bar Simi, so Rabba Bar Simi will say in response, Elomai, Mishum Kavod. Are you saying that the issue is a matter of honor? Katan Bar Kavod, who is the Katan, a minor, a child, someone who is, let's say, subject to the issue of receiving sufficient honor? That's something that's adult-related, not children-related. Ela, so what are you going to have to say if you're going to argue the point that the continued roles are for honor purposes? There's the issue of the father's honor or the Rebbe's honor. That's what's at stake. Well, hachanami, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Hachanami, so to hear, iko nitsuye aviv nitsuye rabo. That if you have the katan, son of Mr. X, is doing the Haftorah, so the father or the Rebbe can get upset that, what, my son should do the Haftorah and you should go and do Poros HaShemayim, get paid for that? So that we, even if the Kotan is the one that's doing the Haftorah, in a situation where the Poros HaShemayim is there for pay, so then the father or the Rebbe of that child shall continue those additional roles. Pocheach, Pores al Shma, v'chulei. We saw in the Mishnah, the second crown marking, that the Pocheach, using, now here there's an interesting thing. Rashi here seems to explain, similar to the Tosfos who quoted the Rabbeinu Alfis on Amud Aleph, the Pocheach is one who is scantily clad or wearing tattered clothing. That's a Pocheach. And in general, the Pocheach is a problem of, the Pasuk says, Lo Yer B'cho Ervaz Dover, Rashi quotes that covered parts of one's body should not be exposed. So now, with that in mind, the Gemara asks, Bo Amine Ula Bar Rav Me Abaye. So Ula asks of Abaye, Katan Pocheach, Mao Shiyukra B'tura. What about a minor who, one of the roles that he's allowed to do is to read from the Torah? Granted, he's not, the Kotan is not Poreis al Shema, but he can read from the Torah. So what about a minor who happens to be Pocheach, wearing tattered clothing? Can he do what he is allowed to do in general, what a Kotan in general is allowed to do, and that is read from the Torah? Omar le, so Abaye responds, V'tiboyeloch oroim. Why don't you ask about an oroim? Someone who is unclothed. Oroim, my time alo, why don't you ask about an oroim reading from the Torah? Mishum kvot sibo, because that would be dishonorable to the congregation. Hochonami, so to a koton pocheach. Mishon Kavod Sibor, it would be a dishonor to the congregation having someone in that state, a tattered clothed minor, reading the Torah for them. As you can see, this concept of Kavod Sibor is a recurring theme in the last couple of sukkahs. If you recall, we had this in the realm of a woman who, even though she's Oyla Laminyan, it's a lack of Kvot Sibor to have her read the Torah for everyone else. And we explained in our previous year at some length the issue of Kol Kavoida Basmelech Pnimo. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have an Osei topic heading. Hesper Lishitas Rabbi Yehuda Sha'omar Desuma Shelo Moirus Miyomov Eino Poreis Al Shema. We're going to be focusing on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who said, contrary to the Tanakhama, that a Suma, someone who is unsighted, is not allowed, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not allowed to be Poreis Al Shema. once again, the part of being Parashas Shema is the recitation of the first bracha of Kriya Shema, the morning Kriya Shema, Yotzer Or Vorei Choshech Oisei Shalom V'Sakol, where we speak about the Almighty Hamer Lors V'Demrael. We refer to the Almighty as the one who created the sources of light that we benefit from. So Rabbi Yehuda says, someone who never saw light shall not do Parashas Shema. Tanya, Omru Lo L'Rabbi Yehuda. So the Rabbanon who say that a Summa, an unsighted person, is allowed to be Poreis Al Shema, they said to Rabbi Yehuda, Harbe Tzofu Lidrosh B'Merkava V'lo Ro Osa Mimam. The word Merkava is a reference to literally the heavenly chariot. But Rashi points out it's the Merkava of Yechezkel. It's a section in the prophecy of Yechezkel where there's a, we'll say, a divine or heavenly revelation of the angels and other holy bodies holy entities that serve the Almighty. That's called the Merkava. Now, no human being ever saw that, and yet we do have passages, we have people that expound upon that topic. Their Dorshu B'Merkava V'lo Ro'o Sam Yimam, and never saw it. So the fact that you never saw something isn't a reason to be restricted from enunciating, talking, praying, mentioning those things. By the same token, the Rabbanan say, so a Summa never saw light. That shouldn't be the reason for preventing him. Rabbi Yehuda responds, Hasam Ba'avnisa Deliba Talya Milsa. There, regarding the Merkava, it's an issue of understanding. Avna, so like from the word havona, the libo, your heart, meaning it's an issue of intellectual awareness, understanding, analysis. V'ha komechavim v'yoda, and a person, even if he didn't physically see it, he can concentrate and analyze and come to an understanding. That's the issue of Merkava. So it's a function of analysis, not based on physical seeing. It's an analysis based on an understanding. Haha. But when it comes to Poreis Al Shema, where you're making the bracha of Yotzarmos, where you're praising the Almighty for His creating light, Mishum Hanohu, it's a function of praising Him for something that we benefit from. For Hallas Lehana, a person who's unsighted, he has no benefit from light. He lives his life in darkness. The Rabbanan, having heard Rabbi Yehuda's argument, the Rabbanan respond to the point. Is Lehana, he does have Hana, even though he lives in darkness, the Summa nevertheless has Hana from light to Rabbi Yossi, based on the teaching of Rabbi Yossi. Desanyan, we have a Tanaic source, and you should note, by the way, that this section of Gemara is marked as a long point till the Mishnah. So the Rabbanan now describe how an unsighted man, a person who lives his life in darkness, benefits from light. Tisanya Om Rabbi Yossi, Kol Yomai Hoisi Mitztair Al Mikrozeh. All my life I was troubled by the following pasuk. Pasuk in Dvorim, in the Toichacha, it says, Voyisa Memashesh Bat Sohorayim Kaasher Yamashesh Ho Iver Ba'afela. This is a section of the Torah which deals with curses for that would befall the Jewish people if they don't keep the Torah and the mitzvos. And it says that you will feel around at high noon, like a iver, a blind man feels around in the afela, in the dark. Now, the pasuk, in trying to describe the situation, it says like the blind man struggles in the dark. It gives you the feeling that the blind man doesn't struggle when there is light. That's the implication. But that's a problem. What difference does it make to the blind man between darkness and light? Rabbi Yossi continues telling us, until a certain incident happened, and as a result of this incident, I see that it does make a difference to the blind man whether it's light outside or pitch dark outside. Once I was walking along in the darkness of light, of night and the darkness. For isi sumo shoya mahalich baderech, and I noticed an unsighted individual walking on the road, the avuka biyado, and he had a lit torch in his hand. Omarti lo bni avuka zu lomolach. What value does a torch have for you? It's not lighting the road up for you. You can't see the road anyway. You live in darkness. So what does a torch help you? Omar Lee. So the blind man said to me, Kolzman Shavuka Biyodi, as long as a torch is in my hands, Bnei Odom Royim Osi Umasim Osi Min HaPechosin Umin HaKoitzim Umin HaBarkonim. Sighted people can see me and save me. Matsim Osi, save me or prevent me from Pechosim, from falling into a ditch, or Koitzim, thorns, and Barkonim, thistles. So that a blind man, a person who has no sight, a person who lives in darkness, benefits from the fact that light exists, and it enables sighted people to see the blind man and help him, prevent him from stumbling. So with that svara in mind, the Rabbanon justify the sumo being pures al shma. He does have benefit from the oros, and he can say yotzam oros. Yotzer Or Vorechoshech, and the brach ending with Yotzer Hamaros, the former, the Almighty who creates illumination. And we arrive here at a new Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading Ba'ayos, problems, B'Kohanim, that concern Kohanim, since we discussed the issue of being Noisias Kapayim, of the priestly blessing, the Tuchening. So we have troubles or problems that arise with regard to Kohanim, Shigormim, Histaklus Behem, Bishas, Birchas Kohanim, that as a result of their physical defects or problems or deficiencies, people will look upon them at the time that they are doing their priestly blessing. Therefore, they should not go to the spot in the shul where Birchas Kohanim is taking place. The point being that when Birchas Kohanim is taking place, we want people to concentrate on the blessing and not look on at the Kohanim and thereby experience what's called Hesech Hadas. That's one of the commentaries. Another one of the commentaries you find is that looking at the Kohanim while they are duchening is not proper, and that's because the divine presence rests upon their hands, and it's not proper to gaze upon the divine presence. Now we turn to the Mishnah. Kohen sheish biyado mumin lo yisos kapov. A kohen that has on his hands blemishes, he should not do the birkas kohen. Yisos kapov literally means raise his hands, but it is a reference to leading in, or reciting the priestly blessing, the Birkas Kehanim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af mi shohoyu yodov tzvuol setis lo yisos kapov. Likewise, a person whose hands are stained or dyed with this type of color, that's a type of paint or dye, he should not do Nesias Kapayim, and they show him Mistaklimbo, because people will be gazing upon him. Will be gazing at that. It's something that attracts their attention. Tona, Mumin Shomru, the Mumin that we have spoken about is not limited to his hands, but Ponov, Yodov, Viraglov. Problems that are facial, problems that are hand-related or foot-related. Omar of Yeshua ben Levi, Yodov bohaknios lo yiso es kapov. If a person's hands are spotted, they're freckled or spotted with the bohak, in the context of Negoyim is a skin discoloration that we learn about in the Chumash in Parshas Tazria, which speaks about Tzoras. The word bohak appears in that discussion in the rabbinic discussion concerning the white discoloration. So it seems to be a reference to white spots that are on his hand. He should not lead the Birkas Kohanim. Tanya Nami Hochi Yodov Bohaknios, if his hand is speckled, lo yiso es kapov. Akumos Akushos lo yiso es kapov. If his hands are bent or they're twisted sideways also he should not be nosei as kapov. Omar Rav Asi, chifni ubishni lo yiso es kapov. Chifni is a reference to Haifa, to a city in Israel. Bishni is a reference to Beit Shan. They should not be nosei as kapayim. What is the problem with regard to those people? We'll see in a minute. Tanya nami hachi ein moridin lifnei ateva lo anshe beis shan velo banshe beis Haifa velo anshe tivoinin. We do not allow to lead the davening, to recite the Shemona Esrei on behalf of the Tzibor, people who are from Beis Shan, from Haifa, or from Tivoin. But they, and here is the problem, they should kurin la'alfin einin la'ainin alfin. When it comes to pronouncing these letters, Aleph and Ayin, they switch them around. On a more practical level, Rashi explains, for example, with regard to Birkos Kehanim, which Rav Asi said, these people who confuse the letters Aleph and Ayin should not be Noisias Kapayim. In the Birkos Kehanim, there is a pasuk, Yo'er Hashem Ponovei Lecha Vichuneko. Yo'er from the Lashon of Or, light, like the Almighty should show His light upon you. Now, if you switch an Aleph with an Ayin, you will end up saying Ya'ir Hashem Ponov, and that word Ya'ir is a lashon of klala. It's an expression indicating something of a cursed nature. So you don't want to have a kohen who's going to, instead of saying a blessing, saying a curse. Omar le Rabbi Chiya le Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe. Rabbi Chiya says to the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, to Rabbi Shimon, Il mole ato Levi, if you were a Levi, now he's not a Levi, but if he would be a Levi, posul ato min aduchan, you would not be allowed, you wouldn't be qualified to arise upon the platform, the duchan here. Don't confuse this word with duchaning. Duchaning is a reference, is a colloquial expression referring to the Birkas Kehanim, to Nesias Kapayim. Duchan here is a formal platform, a physical wooden platform upon which the Levium stood in the Beis HaMikdash when they were involved in song. So Rabbi Chiya tells Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe, you would be puzzled to stand on the platform Mishum Da'ovi Kolech. We mentioned wooden platform, that's something that really needs to be analyzed, but it's a detail for right now. But they stood on a platform in the Azor of the Beis HaMikdash, and you, says Rabbi Chiya to Rabbi Shimon, you would be unfit, because the Ovi Kolech, now here we'll translate, but we can't elaborate because we don't have any recordings dating back to the time of the Beis HaMikdash, but Ovi Kolech translated would mean you have a thick voice. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean a hoarse voice or a gravelly voice or some other voice issue? Whatever it was, whatever Ovi Kolech really means, Reb Shimon bar Rebbe had that. So Reb Chiya made a comment, Reb Shimon bar Rebbe, you could look at it objectively, someone could take it also as an insult. Also, Omar Le Lavua, Reb Shimon Rebbe came and told his father, Rebbe, what Reb Chiya had said about him. Omar Le, so Rebbe says, Zil Eim Ole, you go tell Rebbe Chiya the following. Kishatu Mogia Eitzel, V'chikisi Lashem. That's a pasuk in Yeshaya, Perikhes Pasuk Zayin. If you, Rebbe Chiya, would read that pasuk, Lo nimseis mecharef umegadef, would it not come out that you are blaspheming? Because Rabbi Chiya had trouble pronouncing the letter ches. He would pronounce it as a hey. So that let's take for example, many people pronounce the holiday that is celebrated in the month of Kislev, where we light a menorah, we call it the holiday of Hanukkah. He would not refer it as Hanukkah, using the Ches pronunciation. Whether that's the actual Ches pronunciation or not is not the point right now, but he would pronounce it Hanukkah, like you find many many say non-Hebrew speakers. You find in English literature, English publications, when they want to refer to that holiday, they spell it H-A-N-U-K-A-H, Hanukkah. So that's what happens with regard to, that was Rabbi Chiya's pronunciation. He had the trouble pronouncing the ches. So when it would come to this word, it would come out the hikisi Lashem. Hikisi means, and I hit, I struck. And how can you say such a thing? I struck the Almighty. That would be blasphemous. The hikisi means I waited for the Almighty. So if Rabbi, now, I don't know if you're supposed to take this type of discussion on an hour level of understanding, a personal insult type give and take. I'm not sure, but if that's the case, so that you had Rabbi Chiya seemingly insulting Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe, Reb Shimon Bar Rebbe go telling his father about that, and his father, in defense of his son, so to speak, so tells his son, Rabbi Shimon, you go tell Rabbi Chiya what's going to be when you come to pronouncing this pasuk v'chikisi. You're going to be really messing up on that. I'm not sure. It sounds a little bit juvenile, a little childish. On the other hand, there's the human element is involved. The people are subject to being insulted. And how do you deal with that? That's a question that is a little bit beyond the purview of our Gemara markings here. But as we say often that learning Gemara is learning life. You're living life through learning Gemara. And here you have a type of interchange that does arouse some curiosity. Omar Rav Huna. And before we continue, we do have a new marking on the side under the Nosei Mivne heading. We have a house shape. And under that we note number one, Zavlagon. Number two, Sumo Be'achas Me'enov. Shnei Bayos Benesias Kamayim. There are two problems that the Gemara raises in the context of the Nesias Kapayim, Duchening, the Kohen priestly blessing. Both problems are eye-related. Shim Hoya Dosh Biro Muter. The Gemara will point out that even though these are problems, if, however, the Kohen is not a newcomer to town, but he's well known in town, people are accustomed, Dosh Biro, they're accustomed in his town to his deficiency, his blemish, then it's not a problem for him to be Noisias Kapov. So as we continue in the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna, Zavlagon lo yiso eskapov. Zavlagon might very well be someone whose eyes are very teary. He should not be nosei eskapayim. And again, we've spoken in the past, in today's shiur, about the problem of people who have some unusual aspect to them that will cause people to, their attention is drawn to them and not, they're not concentrating on the brocha that they are receiving. Now, what's interesting here is this is a side point that I'm not equipped to deal with right now, but common practice, we're familiar with the Kohanim having a talis over their heads, covering them when they are doing the Birkas Kohanim. Does that make a difference? Or is the Gemara referring to a practice where maybe they didn't do that at all? They simply rose as they were in front of the tzibur, and people could see them if they were to look in their direction? That's something that one has to look into a little further. But as far as the Gemara itself is concerned, someone who is a Zavlagon should not do Nesias Kapayim. Question, there was a case of a Zavlagon, the Havad B'Shivavuse de Rav Huna. Shivavuse means the neighborhood. He lived in the neighborhood of Rav Huna, the Havad Poros Yodei, and he did, Poros Yodei means to stretch out his hands, means he did Nesias Kapayim. So you have a Kohen who was a Zavlagon in Rav Huna's neighborhood doing Nesias Kapayim. So how can Rav Huna himself say that a Zavlagon should not do it? So the Gemara answers, Hahu, the story involving Rav Huna and the Zavlagon there, Dosh Be'iro Havei. He was someone that the community was very accustomed to. Tanya Nami Hochi, and the Brisa supports this. Zavlagon lo yuses kapov, ve'im hoyo Dosh Be'iro muter. If the community Dosh, they were accustomed to his situation, he is allowed to nose his kapayim. And now we have almost a repeat Gemara, just a different phenomenon, but the same structure of Gemara. Amar of Yochanan, suma b'achas me'enov, lo yiso es kapov. Now here, we alluded to this earlier, what exactly does the word suma mean? So suma is certainly someone who lacks eyesight. However, in this context, I'm not sure that it means someone whose optic nerve has been ruptured and hence cannot see. The person that had that happen to him, he looks totally normal. If you look at him, he just lacks eyesight. Here, I believe that we're dealing with someone. Suma means he is literally missing his eye, or his eye is totally shut, so that one of his eyes is, not only is it not functioning eyesight-wise, it's physically not there. And I try to base this explanation, number one, on the Svara, because of the context of the Gemara, where we're dealing with someone that would ordinarily attract attention. Someone who simply doesn't have eyesight, but his eyes, his physical eye ball is located in its normal position, and unless you otherwise know, you think he's sighted. So why would he be someone that would attract attention? He wouldn't attract attention. However, here we're talking about someone, as I suggest, is actually lacking an eye. Now that expression, you can see in Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, In a totally unrelated topic. There the Gemara is discussing images, the prohibition of having images of human images carved or statues sculpted. And in that Gemara, in Rosh Hashanah Chof Dalet Amud Beis, you see the statement, Sami Einei Dedain, which would be basically efface the eye of that engraven image. So sami, like the word suma, has to do with effacing, a physical removal of. And here, suma b'achas me'enov might very well mean physically is lacking one eye. Either the eye is sealed shut, or there's no eye in the eye socket. So someone like that, lo yisos kapov, he should not be noseis kapayim, the Gemara says. That's Rabbi Yochanan's point. The Gemara asks, v'ahu, there was a sumachas man of Rav Shusin Rabbi Yochanan that was in Rabbi Yochanan's own neighborhood. It was actually, like we saw before with Rav Huna, here is a story within Rav Yochanan's own neighborhood, and he, this sumachas me'enov, was a poros yode. He was doing the Birkas Kehanim. So the Gemara answers, Hahu dosh be'iro havei. He was someone that people were accustomed to. Everyone in the neighborhood was familiar with him, and they wouldn't be looking upon him when he's doing the Birkas Kehanim. Tanya Nami Hochi, Sumabach's main of Loyus says Kapov, Vim Hoyo Dosh Be'iro Mutter. Review the Oimer, Misha Hoyu Yodov Tzvuos Lo Yisoes Kapov. One whose hands are dyed, they're colored with paint or dye, he should not do Birkas Kehanim. Tana, Imroiv Anshio Ir, Melachton Bekach. If most of the people of that community work with dyes, and most of the people's hands are stained with these colors, mutter, then it would be allowed for a Kohen in that community to do the Birkas Kehanim, even though his hands are also dyed. Ha'oimer, before we go on actually with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side under our topic heading, Hanhogos Psulos. We'll speak about conduct that's unfit, that's unacceptable. Be'over lifnei ateva and betfilin. We'll be discussing with in the context of serving as the prayer leader, the over lifnei, the one who would recite the prayers on behalf of the tzibur, and we'll speak about matters relating to tefillin. Ha'oimer eini oiver lifnei ateva b'tzvuim. Someone announces, I am not going to lead the prayers other unless I'm wearing colored clothing, as opposed to white clothing. He says, I'm not going to lead, I'm not going to serve as Shliach Tzibor if I'm going to be wearing colored clothing. In other words, I'm going to serve only wearing white clothing. Someone like that, after Levonim Lo Yavo, we won't allow him to lead the prayers even wearing white clothing. The Gemara will explain what the problem is. Number two, Besandol, Eini Over. I am not going to lead the prayers wearing shoes. In other words, he wants to stand there barefoot. Af Yochef Lo Yavor. He shall not serve as the Shliach Tzibor, must Over Lifnei Ateva, even as he wants. He's disqualified himself by the things he has said. And the slash mark indicates that that which follows is a new point. It refers, we now discuss tefillin. Ha'oisit filasei argula, one who makes his head tefillin, the tefillin shel roish, rounded. And we'll see later in the Gemara, rounded like an egg or a nut, sakona, v'ein ba mitzvah. It's dangerous, and it is not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. The tefillin must be squared or cubed, not round. Nosno al mitzchoi, if he places his tefillin shorosh on his forehead, that's not the place for them. Oyal pasyod, or tefillin shalyad, he places on the palm of his hand. It's also not the place for them. Harezu derech haminus, that is the way of the apostates. The apostates, the minim, would read the Torah literally. And we've used a double underline to highlight the expressions derech minus, derech achitzonim, and we'll see on the next omid also another expression like this. So one who is a min, he'll read the Torah literally. And the pasuk says that you shall place your tefillin bein v'hoyu l'totofos bein einecha. And the pasuk says ukshartem los al yodecha. Yodecha is on your hand. And they take it literally that bein einecha means between your eyes. That would be on your forehead, between your eyes. Al yodecha, or al be on your hand, on the palm of your hand. And yet, that's, as we say, that's the literal reading of the Torah, but the oral tradition dictates otherwise. So someone who does these things, he puts it on his forehead or he puts it on the palm of his hand, he is behaving like an apostate. Tzipon Zahav, if he coated his tefillin in gold, v'nosna al beis unkeli shelo, or he wore his tefillin on his sleeve, not directly on his flesh, but on his sleeve. Hare ze derech achitzonim. That's the way of the outsiders. What does that mean? The outsiders, Rashi explains, at the end of the narrow lines, b'nei odom ha-hoychim achrei da'atom, chutz midas chachomim. People who follow their own thinking, the way, this is a very unfortunate common phenomenon, people interpret Judaism the way they think things should be. What could be more glorious than gold-covered tefillin? So they think on their own that that's the way things should be. That's chutz, outside of the das hamam, of the teachings of the sages. The bo'inon, we need the tefillin to be covered. L'cholios, v'hoyu l'cholios al yodecho, it says. V'lo l'achirnos, it should be dafka, the tefillin shel yad is to be covered and not visible to others. We now turn back to the Gemara. My time, referring to the beginning of the Mishnah, someone who says, I'm not going to serve a Shliach Tzibor wearing colored clothing. What's the problem here? Cheshinon Shema Minus Nizrakapa, we're suspect that maybe he is amongst the apostates. The idol worshippers, the apostates in the time of the Gemara, that's what their way was. They were insistent on serving their deities wearing white. So if someone expresses his insistence on that, we start becoming suspicious. But it's again, it's a function of his expressing his insistence on the white, and I won't go with colored clothing. That's what causes our suspicion. Someone doesn't make such an announcement, he happens to be wearing a white robe and he wants to lead the services, that's a different story. Ha'oise tfilose agula sakona v'ein bo mitzvah. Lemo tanino leha de tonu rabbanan. Can we say that our Mishnah supports the following brisa? If you have a Mishnah that supports a brisa, that means the brisa is authoritative. It has its roots, it has its basis, it has it's sanctioned by a Mishnah. Mishnah being a more authoritative source of literature. So, can we say that our Mishnah serves as a confirmation of the following teaching in a Tanaic source? Tfilin merubois halacha lemoshe misinai. Square tefillin is an oral tradition dating back to Mount Sinai. It's an oral tradition to Moshe from Mount Sinai. So now, this Tanaic source says that basically says you have to have a square tefillin. V'yomar Rava, when we speak about squareness, betifron ubalachsoinum. That means that when the tefillin, I'm sure many of you are familiar with tefillin and know what they look like, the tefillin are essentially they're leather boxes that have capsules of parchment that are inserted into them. And then the bottom of the tefillin, there's a bottom flap, if you will, or cover on the bottom of the tefillin that is sewn shut. Tifron, that is a reference to the stitching of the tefillin, should be in such a way that you don't stitch them crumpling up the tefillin. If you pull on the sinews that are used to stitch up the tefillin, if you pull on them very hard, you can end up distorting their shape. So Rava explains this Tanaic source that says tefillin must be square. You're careful when you sew them shut not to distort their squareness. Alachsona means that the diagonal in the tefillin, when you measure its diagonal, it should have the proper diagonal side ratio. When you have a perfect square, for every one unit of measure of the side of the square, there will be 1 2/5 unit of measure in the diagonal. The diagonal of a square is naturally longer than any one side of the square. What's the ratio? So the Chazal ratio is 1 2/5. It's 1 2/5. If you have one, let's say 1 inch of side, you'll have 1 2/5 inch in the diagonal. So the question right now is, our Mishnah that says that tfilosa gula is not good, well, if you say not agula, if you say agula is no good, it leaves you room to think that it must be a square, so that our Mishnah would support this Tanaic source. Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, no, we can't say that our Mishnah supports this source. When our Mishnah rules that tfilos agula is no mitzvah, masnisa davido ki amguza, it's not something that's simply circular. That's not what the Mishnah is rendering unfit. What the Mishnah is disqualifying is ki amguza, like a nut, spherical, ball shape, or nut shape. Spherical. However, if you would have, we're not saying this is the halacha, far from it, but according to the Mishnah, what the Mishnah says is unfit is something that's spherical. Let's say you had a pair of tefillin, the tefillin shorosh, that are flat bottom, they simply have to be round in shape. It's a circular disc, something that I think you see in the Rashi used expression kadosha. Kadosha is a type of bean, like a lentil that's flat, it's a round disc shaped thing. So as far as the Mishnah is concerned, that is not what's disqualified. What the Mishnah disqualifies is something that's a sakona that could lead to something that could endanger you. If you have, let us say, spherical, a nut shaped tefillin, and someone would, while wearing the tefillin, would bang his head where his tefillin are, bang it into the wall. So the fact that it's spherical could actually work to fracture one's skull. If it's flat bottom, so that danger doesn't exist. So the Mishnah was preoccupied with something that's spherical, but not necessarily excluding, or I should say, not necessarily disqualifying something that might be round and flat. The Brisa, in fact, does disqualify a disc shaped, round-shaped tefillin. That is true, but that's not what our Mishnah is talking about. That's what you see in this Braisa. But to say that our Mishnah supports this Braisa, as we explain, that you can't say. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.